Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to U.S. National Politics. I'm your host, Chauncey Brown. Welcome to all of our listeners. We have a very exciting show today. Our guest in the studio is a doctoral student. He is a political strategist and a doctoral student in education, longtime community activist and public servant and humanitarian. I'd like to welcome doctoral student to the show, Mr. Mallory Earle. Good afternoon, sir. How are you? Is Mallory Earle in the studio?
Oh, I'm sorry. I apologize. I thought I had unmuted, but I muted my phone. Thank you for the introduction.
No problem. As long as your technical difficulties are taken care of, everything is all well. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I was saying I'm multitasking, so I apologize.
No worries. Today's show, or today's discussion, is about how family members of Congress have financially enriched themselves. And you and I both understand that there are many ways in which Congress members can enrich themselves by what they vote for, what they sponsor, or what they invest in. Thank you for coming on today to talk about how Congress members have enriched themselves through war and military spending, et cetera. Talk about how you came across this and your findings, and what do you think about it?
Well, I saw an article, and I decided to read it, which talked about this topic. It was on Sludge Report. And I recall the conversation I had many years ago when they decided to keep Congress from doing insider trading. And when I say insider trading, what was being done at that time was, of course, Congress members knows what bills are coming up and how companies may be affected. And what they would do, they would either sell their stock or have their family sell their stock or purchase stock when they know which way, you know, things would be affected. So when I was looking at this article, and it talked about war and stocks, I decided to read it. And when I looked at the list of names, no surprise to me, it's members of both parties that are profiting off of war. And it's a pretty extensive list. When you look at the list and you see not only senators but Congress members as well, you understand why they may vote the way they do on several topics, especially if it's not friendly to their war cause.
Yes, there's a lot of money that we're talking about here as it relates to war and the top defense stocks and investments. Do you see now that we have members of Congress, or are you suggesting that members that are, or do you know of any members, or should we look out for the members that are listed here to see what their stances on are on the military in the future? And I guess that will give us a good gauge of where they are at.
Well, I believe so. And I'm also curious how many of these individuals actually recuse themselves on any of these votes. Because mind you, some of them may not own the stock directly, but their spouses may. And that's really a problem if your spouse has stock and you're voting actually on a bill that will impact that stock. And yeah, we need to keep watch on it. These members, their friends, because for instance, one of the names that's listed on here is Dianne Feinstein, and we know how influential she is. She may convince a few others to vote a certain way, knowing that her or someone within her circle may profit from it. Now, I'm not accusing Feinstein. I just took her name off the list because it says here she has a maximum value of investments of $650,000 and is in Boeing. And this information is public. So I'm not trying to fame anyone. I'm just using that example. Also, you have one here as far as congresspeople, Phil Rowe, Tennessee, and his investment amount is $203,000, and he's invested in Lockheed Martin, United Technologies, and Honeywell. So I'm curious how many of these individuals actually did recuse themselves, if they recuse themselves, or if not, then we need to get an answer as to why not. This, again, goes back to sort of insider trading, which is supposed to be disallowed. And it's ironic, you'll see someone go to Congress, and they may not be wealthy, but after a few years, they become one of the wealthiest individuals in their community. And I've seen this since I've worked in many districts across the East Coast. And that type of greed is one of the reasons why we have problems down in D.C. Drain the swamp? Yeah, we need to drain the swamp, but we need to see and understand how the swamp continues to be empowered.
That is well stated. And it seems that, like, since President Trump has become president, the lobbyists are finding it difficult not only to make money, but to influence Congress. And Congress, I guess, is having a difficult time making money because Donald Trump is the president as a result, because he is not a part of the establishment, the Washington swamp outsider business person. And he's learned very quickly the game of politics, especially Washington politics. And that's definitely something that America should be aware of, on how these Congress people are benefiting from war, and all of these companies that are tied to it, like Honeywell, Boeing, Lockheed Martin, United Technologies, Raytheon, you know, General Dynamics. There's a lot of companies here that are on the stock market that there are about, I don't know, at least 15 or 20 members of Congress that have a financial investment, and like you said, on both sides of the aisle. And I don't know if that's appropriate. I mean, I guess it's legal because they do it, but even having stocks and interest is an appearance of a conflict unless you acquired it prior to being in office. But I think that you should divest or not have those stocks when you are in office, or not to be able to make any money on that. But apparently that's not the case, because that's why we're having this show today. Are you aware of any Congress people that are trying to legislate them not being able to receive a financial benefit, like the investments on the financial side? Are you aware of any?
Not at this moment. I wish there were, and if there are, if anyone would please share that, that would be appreciated, because we do need something like this. It's ridiculous when you look at the money that controls our government. And unfortunately, another reason why the money is not being made is because we have a House representative that is looking to impeach the president at every step, because he is interfering with the money that the lobbyist throws around. Being an outsider and being one that can't be brought off, he is exposing a lot of things. So it's a twofold thing. He's exposing, and at the same time, the House of Representatives is looking to investigate, not legislate. And at the while they're doing that, we, the small people, suffer. Infrastructure, a big project that they talked about completing, that's not being worked on. And we also would need to look into that sphere and see which Congress people, senators, have stock in those companies and who will vote on that, because we're just looking at defense right now. We're looking at the war aspect. But there's more than just war stocks that are owned by our representatives in D.C. There might be, I'm sure there's people making money on several things that are being held up now. And it's a shame. We shouldn't be voting someone in office that's supposed to be a public servant, and within a couple of years, they're bought off to the point that they're very wealthy and lose their connections to the community, and they become beholden to the money in D.C. And thus, the swamp continues to grow.
It's ironic that you mentioned Senator Dianne Feinstein, who is the top, has a top investment of $650 million or $650,000. $650 million or $1,000? $650,000 invested in Lockheed Martin, right? No, in Boeing.
In Boeing.
On the flip side of that, her net worth is $43.72 million a year. She lists number 9 of the top 10 members of Congress's net worth.
Who's at the top of that list?
I think his name is Congressman Daniel Issa out of California. Let me double check. Representative Darrell Issa out of California. He's the top. Then you have Representative McCall. Rockefeller is ranks number 4th at $108.5 million worth.
Wow.
Senator Blumenthal, I think he's from New York, is worth $62.0 million.
Mm.
A lot of money. There is a lot of money. And, you know, I'm looking at The Atlantic right now, an article that is outlining how this is broken down and if they got their money, you know, over time, but it came into office with money or not. But, yes, it's very troubling. And then we know that today that money influences policy. And most times, because money influences policy, the policies that are enacted normally do not benefit the masses of people or increase the quality of life for those individuals that those policies are enacted on by the wealthy donors. And we know that even outside the mainstream, you know, that's why prescription drug prices are so high, and that's why they can't get costs under control. And they probably won't get it under control anytime soon and continue to make it a political talking point because they have too much to lose. You know,
yeah.
I think a lot of the
It's interesting you brought up the pharmaceutical because I think of a great example a couple of years ago when Senator Sanders helped to sponsor a bill to purchase drugs from outside the United States, which would be cheaper and save each patient. One particular individual of a state that's number one in the nation when it comes to pharmaceuticals and who receives a lot of donations, pharmaceuticals, voted no, yet he used prescription drugs as a talking point at some point during his campaign for the Democratic nomination. And that person is Cory Booker. He actually voted no on the legislation proposed by Sanders. Now, why would he do this? As I stated, New Jersey is the number one state when it comes to pharmaceuticals. And if you look at his donor list, many are pharmaceutical companies. So that's an example of how one becomes beholden to the money and not the community at large.
I have a list here of six of the three senators. These three senators received the biggest checks from pharma companies. And this is money that they purport to report through ELECT, according to the Forbes Review of Federal Election Commission's filings from 2009 to 2018. PACs of Abi, AstraZeneca, Bristol Myers Squibb, Johnson & Johnson's, Merck, Pfizer, and Sonify. The seven companies set to appear before Senate Finance Committee contributed $1.6 million to campaign committees of 27 out of the 28 current members of the Finance Committee.
Wow.
And we're looking at this, a large chunk of that $1.6 million has gone towards the campaign committees of six senators who have received $100,000 or more from those seven companies, PACs in the last decade. The company committee of Senator Bob Casey, Democrat of Pennsylvania, ran for re-election in 2018, received the most in the time span of $121,500. Merck and Sanofi both have corporate campuses in Pennsylvania. Other senators who received at least $100,000 from pharma PACs include Mike Crapo, a Republican from Idaho, at $119,000. Rob Portman, which I was surprised to hear, Republican from Ohio, at $113,000. And Johnny Isaacson, Republican from Georgia, at $107,000. And another one of my surprises, Tim Scott, Republican from South Carolina, at $101,000. And then we have Tom Carpenter, Democrat from Delaware, at $100,000. So as we see, members or senators on both sides of the aisle are benefiting from these large donations. And it's ironic I don't hear those particular senators talking about reducing drug costs. But that's a part of Washington politics. No matter what side you're on, you know, the swamp is the swamp. And, you know, once you've tied your hand to big companies, you know, the unfortunate thing is that the losers of this are the people. For those that are tuning in, this is U.S. National Politics. I'm your host, Chauncey Brown. And we're honored to have on our show today longtime political strategist, political activist, community organizer, humanitarian, and doctoral student, Mr. Mallory Earle, as we're talking about today, how family members of Congress have financially enriched themselves through military investments. And now, towards the end of the show, we're talking about Big Pharma and how these companies influence policies by donating to political PACs and political committees, which are legal, but it influences their decisions or their conversation, which hurts the consumer, especially as we talk about big pharma, because they're paying the price to receive those donations and don't get adequate representation on the platform. So we're having the show today to share with the American people, talking about how members of both aisles, Republican and Democrats, are benefiting from being in Congress. And we're happy to have the guest on, Jashil Mallory Earle, helping us talk about these things and exposing and sharing the truth with the American people.
And there's two examples that one I would love to be able to do a show on with you one day, and the other one is another topic as well. One topic was with President Bush and the Iraq War, and you saw how Halliburton made tons of money. Another example where I would love to do a show on is about private prisons and how one Democratic candidate decided to sell their stocks in private prisons right before they decided to run for president. And when you look back, they have ties to an individual that helped the private prison industry to actually explode, and they made tons of money off of it. The candidate I'm speaking of is Hillary Clinton. As you know, her husband, President Bill Clinton, signed the 1994 crime bill, and from that point on, the private prison industry became one of the biggest lobbyists in Washington.
Yeah, and if we look at the 1994 crime bill, the biggest impact to housing those prisons and boosting those stocks were incarcerating minorities throughout the country in large cities. And we saw the rise in incarceration rates, even for minor crimes. But of course, you know, like any stock, you need a product in order to make money. And unfortunately, the crime bill, the product was the Black and Hispanics community in all the major cities throughout the country, became the product for people in Congress to make money. And we're going to have a show on that, on how members of Congress, the 1994 crime bill, impacted not only devastated the Black and Hispanic communities, accelerated the dissemination of it, but how and who financially benefited as a result of the 1994 crime bill and how much money they're worth today. We will definitely have another show on that. That is worth looking into. And I must note that, thank you, President Trump, for the First Step Act that you signed several months ago, releasing people from prison who were wrongfully convicted or their terms were extended beyond what is supposed to be, and they've become released and they're back home with their families. Thank you, because there has been no other president to step up and address this issue, and apparently it's because they've all financially benefited from it.
And one thing I want to add to that, when you look at private prisons, also look at what were the policies as far as housing. Policies that were enacted in different cities, different states, that pushed individuals to be more inclined to have to do something illegal in order to survive. Because that's one angle a lot of people haven't looked at, because there were influences that were pushing individuals either to recidivate or be a first-time offender.
Yes, sir.
So when we do that show, I would love to take that angle as well.
I think that's a great idea. We are almost to a close. I just want to remind everyone who's listening, this is U.S. National Politics. I'm your host, Chauncey Brown. You can follow us on Facebook at U.S. National Politics 101. You can also follow us on Twitter at U.S. Politics Now. And you can also follow us, U.S. Politics, at Blog Talk Radio. Before we close, is there anything else that you would like to share with the American people, Mr. Earl, in our last couple of minutes? And then if people want to reach out to you, if they would like to seek advice or have you on their show, or how can they reach out for any further conversations, how can they get a hold of you?
First, I want to say thank you for having me. I enjoy our conversations. If anyone would like to get a hold of me, you can text me at my cell phone, 973-870-8157. I appreciate it if you would text instead of calling. I will get back to you. There's a lot of interesting topics that we've talked about and we're going to talk about. And people need to understand whatever their love is in this world, if you have a cause or if you have an issue that you want to champion, just know that there's money tied somewhere. And you need to understand what that money is doing, whether it's helping or hurting the cause that you're championing. We talked about a couple of topics, but there's so many topics that we can go into where different members of the House and Senate are profiting at our expense. Thank you for having a show where we can actually discuss these things. And I know your listeners enjoy it. I've seen many comments. I've had people approach me and talk about how great your show has been. So thank you for giving us a medium where we can actually talk about these things and do it in a format where it's not hostile and not degrading, not demeaning, but more empowering. Because we know knowledge is power, and the more knowledge that we can spread, the more powerful each individual become. And as we move to come together, we will show the politicians who the power resides with. Not them, but us. So again, I thank you for that, sir.
You're welcome very much, Mr. Mallory Earl. And yes, we the people, at the end of the day, will prevail. Please join us on Monday at 6:30. I want you to meet Suffolk County Community College Professor Nicholas Giordino, and we're going to talk about the collapse of the American education system and academic freedom, ideological intolerance on college campuses today. I want to thank all our listeners for tuning in to U.S. National Politics. I'm your host, Chauncey Brown. Once again, you can follow us on Facebook and like our page at U.S. National Politics 101. Also on Twitter at U.S. National Politics, as well as U.S. National Politics on Blog Talk Radio. We thank you again for listening. God bless the President of the United States, Donald Trump. God bless America, and God bless you all. Thank you for listening today.